Jupiter is very lucky and larger than life. And it's kind of the energy of lucky girl syndrome, like getting yourself into the right rooms and the right places. I thought it was just so kismet that I followed you for probably 10 years and you have just found me and then you emailed me. And I was like, duh, like there you are. Like, of course, it just felt very, very kismet. And I feel like you might have a lot of those experiences in your life too.
All the time. And especially lately, I just find myself feeling like a master manifester. And I can't tell you that like, oh, like somebody dropped $100,000 into my bank account. Like, it's not like that. It's just things kind of, the past 3 months, especially, things just kind of like shifted. And that's despite like my father-in-law having open heart surgery and moving in with us, and despite like all sorts of family struggles and financial, and like despite the strain, do you know what I mean? It's still, I still feel so like full and alive and grateful. I want to like spread this energy to others, and I didn't know how to do it, which is why I reached out to you, because I'm like, what is going on? What am I tapped into? And then like, how can we all tap into that?
So interesting. I feel like for you specifically, what's going on in your chart is that, yes, you're a Cancer moon and Jupiter has been transiting Cancer since, you know, like the summer. So halfway through this year, and it's getting like closer and closer over your moon, like Jupiter kind of expands whatever it touches. So you've been thinking a lot about Cancerian themes, which is very much domestic bliss. Like you're looking around being like, I'm so grateful for my home and look at my husband across the room and like, look at this. Like you're very like, oh my God, look at everything. Feeling a lot of gratitude. And I don't know if everyone is feeling the same way, but if other people have, if anyone's a Cancer rising or a Cancer sun or another Cancer moon, if you have Cancer in your big three, I think you might be feeling that as well. But I think it's a very personal transit for you right now.
So if you don't have Cancer in those places, you're doomed. That's all. That's the prediction for 2026.
Thanks for having me.
Goodbye. What is in store for us in 2026?
Hi, hello. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women, though all self-lovers are welcome here. I'm Mary. I write and speak about self-love, and I'm best known for my book, The Gift of Self-Love, and I also host retreats for women. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself.
To me, nothing says self-love more than connecting yourself to the sun and moon, the stars, just nature in general. I feel like astrology is such an easy way to add more whimsy and playfulness into your life, and also grounded energy, which is exactly the vibe that Daniela from Cosmic Latte is bringing to Mary's Cup of Tea today. In case you don't follow at the Cosmic Latte, please go do so right now. She just breaks down astrology in such a digestible way, making it personal to you based on your sun, moon, and rising sign, aka the big three, which we dive into in today's episode. Don't worry if you don't know what that is. You're going to learn a lot. Daniela also talks to us about the astrology of weekdays and how to plan your week around the planets, what your Saturn return is, and what kind of challenges are in store for you if you're in your late 20s like me, a time of big shifts and transitions. We unpack all of that. And overall, we talk about how astrology can help support you in your self-love journey. Daniela Karpenos is a New York-based astrologer, founder of Cosmic Latte. It's a community of 200,000 unique souls worldwide devoted to feeding spiritual curiosity, creativity, and connection. With her Leo sun flare and Cancer moon intuition, she shares playful astrology content to help you discover your universe. You can get Daniela's eclipse guidebook. Ooh, we also talk about eclipses and why they're so powerful, or book a private astrology reading over on her website. That's thecosmiclatte.com. I love that it's similar. It feels like a cousin of Mary's Cup of Tea. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this astrology deep dive meets girl chat, meets personal shares, and just tiny little practices, habits that can feel so fresh and rejuvenating, especially in a world that can feel heavy and overwhelming. I hope this conversation helps kick off 2026 in a very positive way. So without further ado, please welcome Daniela from Cosmic Latte to Mary's Cup of Tea. So Daniela, what is your proverbial cup of tea, or should I say latte?
I do a lot of little things to keep me grounded. I feel like that's a very Virgo rising thing to do, a very Virgo rising question for you to ask. And For me, it's doing a little bit of like stretching or yoga in the mornings. I feel like every morning I wake up feeling like I'm 80 years old. I'm close to 30 and I kind of just need to like loosen up. So it's a little bit of a yoga.
And not to be too invasive, but are you brushing your teeth before or after? Because I always try to do like a meditation or a journaling or whatever, but then I'm like, I cannot do this with my nasty breath. So then by the time I start brushing my teeth, it just ends up getting pushed further and further down the priority list.
I have to do it before or I won't make it to the mat. So just keep
your mouth closed, breathe through your nose.
I mean, there's no one to talk to. I'm just in my own energy. So
yeah,
I kind of sometimes forget to brush my teeth after and I'm like, I need to like write things down or I won't do them essentially. It's scary.
Is that a Virgo rising thing?
It is a Virgo rising thing. Every Virgo rising has an insane iPhone list or just like things that, like little things that they're going to do every day that are unrealistic and just keep being pushed to the next day. So it's my downfall.
My notes app probably mirrors yours a lot too, but I'll put in little things like put on chapstick.
Yes. I will put like wash hair. Why can't I just wash my hair? I don't know, but yeah, it's a Virgo rising thing.
Are you an early riser or a...
To me, it feels early, but it's late for other people. I'm usually out of bed around 7:45 or 8. And it's so hard for me for some reason. I do my best work in the mornings and I love to like write and have silence and just I feel so calm. But it's the getting up that's hard. Once I'm up, I'm good. What about you?
I feel like I'm interrogating you about your personal life. Maybe it's just two Virgo risings because podcast listeners know I'm usually not like, what do you do first thing in the morning? Are you brushing your teeth? I think I'm just on this journey of trying to promote different and embrace for myself personally, different routines and like energy levels and not having everything be boxed into this like outdated industrialist 9 to 5, you know, wake up at 6 a.m. to get your goals done. Because I think when a lot of people hear like Virgo or Virgo rising, that's what they think they need to do to just even be successful in general. I'm on my third dream at 7:45. I roll out of bed at 9 a.m. on a good day. And I frequently feel shame in like admitting that. And I feel the need to like justify it by saying, well, I stay up late working and et cetera, et cetera. But the point is I hate sleep shaming. I love like an elongated morning routine and just everybody rising when feels best for them.
I have a question for you, not to be the one interviewing all of a sudden, but there was this video that I saw that was asking if you grew up in a sleep supportive household or a sleep shaming household. So if you overslept, would your parents be like, oh, like, look who's finally rolling out of bed. Like we've already done this and I've done that. Or was it more of like, oh, Mary needed sleep and she needed this rest.
Okay, don't hate me, but the latter. I am so, so lucky. What about you?
For me, it was the former. Like I would have so much FOMO because everyone would be like clattering things in the kitchen, like doing things. My mom loves to sleep in and stay in bed, but she's like doing things at least while she's up. I don't know. There's a lot of like shame I feel around sleeping in too. So that really resonated what you said.
I have a really insane addition to that. I don't think people are even going to believe me. So not only did I grow up in a sleep supportive household on both sides, my parents were divorced. At my mom's house, I would be the one to like get my mom out of bed and be like, come on, you got to go to work. That's a whole different thing about parenting your parent.
Yeah, I'm like clicking to your chart as you're saying that. That's interesting.
But at my dad's side, when I was at my dad's house, he was so protective over my sleep and sleep in general. Like when I was 2.5, they taught me how to plug in the VHS player on my own. As a toddler, I would wake up in the morning if I was up earlier than my parents. It was absolutely illegal, an abomination to wake them up. So I would have to quietly sit with my headphones and watch cartoons. And I knew how to do all that. I literally remember it. Like,
are you an only child or no?
I was for 10 years. And then I got a little sister. Yeah. So then as I got older, my dad still remained very protective over sleep in general, especially mine. And I actually weaponized it because there was also a lot of religious trauma. So then to avoid church, I would just sleep. And that was the only thing that would get me out of things was sleeping. So I slept and slept and slept. And sleeping in specifically, like not going to bed early, but like sleeping in the morning is such a like comfort, I don't know, like childhood wound slash healing. You know what I mean? It's like very convoluted.
Do you purposely find yourself going to sleep late so that you can kind of sleep in and not feel guilty about it the next day because you know you did something before bed?
Yeah, you're catching me at a funny time because my husband's out of town for 4 nights. It is very bad for my mental health when he goes out of town because, yeah, I do that. I stay up, I work, I sleep in, I have no semblance of routine. You know, I could be writing on my phone or I could be like writing my next book. There's no in between. So yeah, just like a very extreme, I suppose, when it comes to sleep. But luckily my partner keeps me grounded and I feel my best with him.
Just to tie up what we're saying, like that is also Virgo rising because Virgo is the energy of like you are what you do every day, like the everyday habits that you do. That's why you have this interest in like daily practices. That's why we're on a call together and you're like, when do you wake up? What do you do in the mornings? Like I'm the same way. I think about that all the time. And that's why my astrology practice is all about grounding the stars. Like how can you use astrology every day as a tool that empowers you and simplifies your life rather than, you know, overcomplicating things and looking years ahead, like really just like a daily tool that I like to use.
Well, let me ask you this. I noticed in your Instagram post specifically, you talk about rising sign like more often than anything else. Or am I making that up?
No, you're picking up on the right thing. And I can't wait to maybe blow your mind. A lot of people don't know this. So basically a lot of horoscopes that you would read in like a magazine like Cosmo, any sort of horoscopes that were printed in newspapers years ago, any horoscopes that come out now, they're all based on your rising sign. But because the rising sign is lesser known, because it's you know, you have to calculate it, you have to know what time you're born, people just leave it off. Like, I don't even blame them because, you know, publishers or companies don't want to confuse people. So they're just like, this is written for an Aries rising or a Taurus rising, but they just leave it off. And they're like, this is for a Taurus. This is for Aries. So a lot of people should read personality traits for their sun sign, but they should not read horoscopes for their sun sign because they're genuinely inaccurate. Like they're not written for them. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I think it would make more sense if we took one step back and just explained the big three. Like what is the sun, moon, and rising?
So the birth chart is a snapshot of the sky when you were born. You know, what sign the sun was in front of is your sun sign. What sign the moon was in front of is your moon sign. And you have this whole snapshot of where every planet was, where the asteroids were, truly anything that you want to read into. But the rising sign is this point that's calculated. It's the sign that's rising on the eastern horizon at the time that you were born. It's kind of like what the direction of your life is pointing to. And it pretty much sets up your whole chart. Once you know your rising sign, it sets up all the 12 houses of a chart. So basically the chart is a circle and it's segmented into 12 pie slices. And each of those slices, each of those 12 pie slices is an area of life. So there's a seventh house of relationships. There's a 10th house of career. And that is what's being transited. So if you have your 10th house of career ruled by Gemini, when the sun is in Gemini, or when the moon is in Gemini, or when Jupiter is in Gemini, it's transiting your 10th house. And so your horoscope is going to be centered on career and life direction and life image. But then if you didn't know that, you would have read, you're an Aquarius sun, you would have read the Aquarius rising horoscope and then just not understood what house of your chart was being affected in that moment. Is that confusing?
Well, the part, like, are all horoscopes wrong then? Like if I'm reading a horoscope for an Aquarius, that's for that's an Aquarius rising? Say,
they are all wrong. The only times they're right is if you're like, sometimes the sun and rising can kind of overlap in some ways. Like if you're an Aquarius rising, you can read the Aquarius sun personality traits or horoscope because it might be kind of similar. But for the most part, most horoscopes that you're reading, if you're reading them for Aquarius, are wrong. Do you read horoscopes? Like how into astrology are you?
I don't read daily horoscopes, but I am pretty into astrology. My mom grew up just incessantly reminding me that I'm an Aquarius and always describing those personality traits to me. She'll be like, you are like this, you are like that. I don't know if she spoke that into existence, but growing up, I just feel like an Aquarius through and through. And perhaps this is a great place to explain what the sun, moon, and rising represent. I always get confused for a Virgo. There's not either a Virgo or Pisces is what people...
You give Pisces energy, which is interesting. Yeah. Well, that makes sense because your descendant opposite from your ascendant, which is the sign opposite from your rising, which is Pisces, is going to be the sign that you attract a lot in your relationships or your friendships. So a lot of Virgo risings, myself included, I have a twin, her as well, attract a lot of Pisces into their lives.
You have a twin?
I do have a twin. And we have the same chart. So it's kind of fun to compare and contrast how our lives are unfolding.
I'm absolutely enthralled by twins, mostly because I would love to have twins. Good experience, yes or no? Sorry to digress.
Good experience, yeah. But we're not the type of twins that do everything together, have the same lives. Like, we've kind of carved our own paths. So it's less, I don't know, I think we've become friends in adulthood. I don't know if we were super close friends growing up. We had a little bit of a competitive edge. We're always compared to each other. So it's nice to be friends in adulthood. And it's been a great experience. I could go on a million tangents, but going back to what I was saying, the descendant is the point with which you meet others. The ascendant is like the driving force of your life. And so if you want a really basic explanation of like sun, moon, rising, the sun is your core sense of self. It's your identity, your consciousness, your vitality, your energy force. It's who you are, but a lot of people don't see it right away if your rising sign is super different. So I have a fire sun sign, I'm a Leo sun. You have an air sun sign, you're an Aquarius sun. And the Virgo rising is a completely different energy. It's a different modality. It's mutable. It's very go with the flow. It's an earth sign. So you come off much quieter, for example, than you really are, or much more maybe reserved is a better word for Virgo, like cautious, reserved, thoughtful, analytical. Like those are things, obviously Aquarius is also analytical, but I think you have a side of you that's very loud and outspoken, and you have Mercury and Uranus close together, which speaks to like a very wacky, eccentric way of thinking about things. Like, I want to ask you about that later. But it's your core sense of self. The rising is how you're approaching your life, the energy that you're trying to kind of grow into, because it's a little bit less familiar. It's how you want to be perceived. And so you as a Virgo rising want to be perceived very put together, very thoughtful, very grounded, very zen, very high achieving. Like, it's how people see you, and you might be confused by those projections of other people. People might be like, oh, Mary, you seem so organized. And you're like, no. Or they're like, do you have an extra hair tie? I feel like you would just have like hairspray or hair ties. And you're like, no, I don't have anything. Like, you come off a lot more almost like type A than you are as a person. And I think you probably get that for me too. You probably, the way that I've emailed you back and forth and the way that I present myself, I come off super type A. I'm so disorganized. I am just complete chaos, but I think it's my Virgo rising that just wants to be very like put together. So the rising is how you want to be seen, and it's the driving force of your life. It's in the driver's seat. Any other planets in the first house or close to your ascendant are in the passenger seat, and they're like helping direct the journey of your life. And the moon is something that people don't often see or sense in a person because it's so private. It's your private inner self. It's how you process your emotions. It's a representative of your relationship with your mother, with home and family. And unless you have your moon above the horizon line, like you have it in the, you know, on the midheaven, or you have it on your rising and people just instantly feel it, most of the time it's more private. Like, people would not know, just meeting you as an Aquarius sun, Virgo rising, how emotional you are. Like, the Cancer moon, we need to like chat about it more either during this call or after. Like, it's so emotional. It's so moody, so crabby. Like, the mood swings are very real for this sign. And I think you cry and are more sensitive than you might come off when people first meet you, essentially. So that's sun, moon, rising in a very condensed way.
The reason why I love this so much, not only because it's self-indulgent to just be described by an astrologist. But as you're speaking from a mental health perspective, I'm thinking about a book that I've recently just took on as my mental health Bible. And it's a book called No Bad Parts by Dr. Richard Schwartz. And he's the creator of Internal Family Systems. And it's just seeing yourself and different parts of yourself as like all welcome at the table and just all being expressed in different ways when triggered or sent back to a certain age when like a part of you had to be protective or managerial or et cetera, et cetera. And so the reason why you asked me how into astrology I am, the reason why I am particularly into it isn't just because I'm like, oh, how is my day going to be like from a horoscope thing? It's more that I love the idea of having a conversation like this where people can listen and be like, oh, that's why I have my shit together or feel like I do at work, but then I come home and I just crumble to the floor and cry. But then I'm also very like quirky and eccentric and have a dark sense of humor and nobody would ever know that because I don't express it much. Like whatever those parts of you are that feel conflicting, I think astrology is one way of seeing yourself to almost like integrate into a whole complete person and like feel confident in that.
Yeah, I think I've heard that before about the no bad parts part of IFS. And if you look at a chart, it really is kind of a bunch of different puzzle pieces and you can isolate them and be like, oh, I hate this placement or like, why do I have this? And a lot of people can think negatively about them, but there are no bad parts and they're just a snapshot of who you are and how it all fits together. But there is a lot of different layers. Like I know you talk a lot about body image and that kind of lens towards looking at self-confidence. And I can see that often in a chart as well. Like Chiron and Taurus, for example, can speak to a body image journey, or Chiron close to the moon is, you know, speaking to a confidence journey as well, or kind of a healing journey. So there's different parts of the chart that can hint to that, but it's so layered and multifaceted that there's no one part essentially.
Because you mentioned body image, and that's something that can often be volatile. I think just confidence as a whole, like, is there something in astrology that, I know you said there's nothing like a specific house, but is there something in astrology that points to why some days we feel like on top of the world in terms of how we see ourselves and then other days you just want to like hide?
There's a few different answers to that. So I don't know which one to start with. I think one way that will really resonate with your Cancer moon is the fact that yes, we have zodiac seasons. Like right now we're recording in Sagittarius season and that's the season of where the sun is, but the moon changes signs every 2 to 3 days. And it's kind of speaking to your fluctuating moods. So when the moon, for example, in your own chart is in the fourth house, or it's when it's in the 12th house, you might have more of a mental health focused day. On a 12th house moon for me and for you, it's ruled by Leo. So when there's a Leo moon, there's a sense of like not really wanting to be seen, not wanting to be perceived, like just kind of wanting to hide out. And then when the moon is in your first house, there's more of that confidence and it can feel like it's fluctuating when you're like, just yesterday, I was so down in the dumps and now all of a sudden I want to be seen and I feel confident and I have energy again. So your energy levels match where the moon is transiting in your chart, but also the more bright the moon is, the more energy you have. So the closer we are to a full moon and, you know, a waxing moon, the more energetic and maybe confident we feel. And just like right now recording at such a low energy point, we're leading into a new moon. It's very quiet and gentle and responsibilities have built up just given where the planets are in the sky right now. So it's a very quiet, grounded sort of energy that, you know, can affect how you feel. So the moon basically affects your mood and emotions, but you can also think of your chart as pointing to a solid or more of a flexible sense of self, because there are 4 mutable signs, Virgo, Pisces, Sagittarius, Gemini. And if your rising sign is in a mutable sign, it can feel like your sense of self is very shape-shifting and that you're a different person with every single person you're with. And you could go through this journey as you grow into yourself of trying to figure out who you are, even though different angles of yourself are lighting up. So I think a lot of rising signs like Virgo risings or Pisces risings are like, who am I and why am I so different depending on where I am and who I'm with?
I I have that experience. Which signs you said experience that?
Virgo risings, Pisces risings, Gemini risings, and Sagittarius risings. And this, I think, could also relate to Virgo suns, Gemini suns, Pisces suns, but I just feel like the rising is how you're kind of meeting people in that energy. And so I think that is where you feel it the most, that shape-shifting energy that can feel kind of inconsistent sometimes.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people think like confidence is about being the same person all the time, but we're all so dynamic. And I think it's fascinating how different people bring out different parts of ourselves. They kind of like reflect, like, I'm not funny, but there's one friend who I hang out with, and I swear we are just wheezing, and she's like wheezing at the things I say. And I'm so shocked by it because I don't have that experience with anyone else. But there's something about when we get together, you know?
That's interesting that you're like, I'm not funny. But it is true. I feel like I'm not funny with certain people, and then I'm really funny with certain people. So it kind of depends on the person. That's part of the journey of having the fixed versus mutable energy.
In terms of like where to look if we're just getting started, you are a big fan of rising sign, right? That's like who we're growing into.
Yeah, I think the rising sign is a great point to start.
And somebody can just like Google this, look up their chart, place of birth, time.
Yeah, you need the time to be as accurate as possible for when you were born. A lot of people haven't seen that their birth chart is a wheel, because if they're using maybe an app like CoStar, it's showing up as like a line, or even Cafe Astrology is showing up kind of this stacked table, but it's a circle. And I think there's a lot to look at there. So if anyone's starting out, it could be interesting, not even to know what it means, but just to find your rising sign and then just look at, like, get a lay of the land, because you can kind of see where there's clusters. And sometimes people have a very even chart, and sometimes it's like all in one house. And you're like, oh, that's interesting.
My hot take is that I feel like more men should be like into astrology, because I think it's often written off as like a girl's thing.
I am going to go off on this, but keep going.
Go off.
Basically, astrology was not always a woman-dominated field. Back in ancient times, they were mostly male astrologers, or there were a lot of male astrologers. A lot of the really good astrology textbooks that I have behind me or that I've read are written by men. So it was a male-dominated field. I don't know why exactly this happened, but there was a shift where horoscopes started to get printed in newspapers and magazines, and they started to be more centered towards women. And as soon as that happened, anything that is centered into women or dominated by women becomes devalued in society. And so the men started dropping away from it. Like, this has happened with teaching or
ballet dancing.
People who play instruments in the orchestra. Yeah, ballet dancing. Like, I don't know, there's a lot of inherent misogyny with astrology nowadays. Like, when I say that I'm an astrologer, it comes kind of with this weird look that I get from guys and look of admiration that I get from women. And so, yeah, there's a lot I can say on this, but just a high level is that it's not always been for women. It's just the fact that it's been kind of geared towards women, that it's dropped off in being valued by the patriarchy.
Totally. I think men's rejection of astrology makes them pretty flat when I've seen them embrace, and just little ways. Like, I tell my husband, like, oh, my cancer soul, you know, who needs time to decompress at the end of the day. And like, you know, there's lots of things around the way we fight. He's very like cancer and like sensitive, but he won't show it in the moment.
Is he a cancer son?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait, that's so cute. When there's sun, when your partner's moon is your sun sign, or your moon is their sun sign, it's really good synastry. So like, my sun is my partner's moon, and it's very common for couples.
Oh, that's so interesting. Cause I think usually when I say like, I'm an Aquarius and he's a Cancer, they're like, how does that work? It's like the lowest on the compatibility scale.
That's why you can't look up like, is my sun sign compatible with this other sun sign? Because there's the whole chart. And if your sun is someone's Venus, or your sun is someone's moon, or your moon is someone's Venus, like, that is so good.
But I think he's starting to see that he's more sensitive than he lets on. But me kind of like encouraging that and being like, you're Cancer, like, obviously, I don't know. I hope it's a positive experience for him. I don't mean to like infantilize, but I do wish that more men would be like just open to it and I think it would make them more well-rounded.
Yeah, I agree.
You emailed me the highest of compliments. You said you have such a Jupiterian energy. If it's a good thing, how do we harness it? Like,
I'm trying to figure out why I said that. Jupiter is very lucky and larger than life. And it's kind of the energy of lucky girl syndrome, like getting yourself into the right rooms and the right places. I thought it was just so kismet that I followed you for probably 10 years, maybe less, but for a long time. And you have just found me and then you emailed me. And I was like, duh, like there you are. Like, of course, it just felt very, very kismet. And I feel like you might have a lot of those experiences in your life too.
All the time. I'm not saying this to be like whatever, but all the time. And especially lately, I just find myself feeling like a master manifester. And I can't tell you that like, oh, like somebody dropped $100,000 into my bank account. Like, it's not like that. It's just things kind of, the past 3 months, especially, things just kind of like shifted. And that's despite like my father-in-law having open heart surgery and moving in with us, and despite like all sorts of family struggles and financial, and like despite the strain, do you know what I mean? I still feel so like full and alive and grateful. Yeah, that's why I wanted to release this on January 1st. I want to like spread this energy to others, and I didn't know how to do it, which is why I reached out to you, because I'm like, what is going on? What am I tapped into? And then like, how can we all tap into that?
So interesting. I feel like for you specifically, what's going on in your chart is that yes, you're a Cancer moon, and Jupiter has been transiting Cancer since, you know, like the summer. So halfway through this year, and it's getting like closer and closer over your moon, like Jupiter kind of expands whatever it touches. So you've been thinking a lot about Cancerian themes, which is very much domestic bliss. Like you're looking around being like, I'm so grateful for my home and I can afford my home and look at my husband across the room and like, look at this. Like you're very like, oh my God, look at everything. And at the same time, your moon is in the 11th house of friendship in your chart. So you're also being like, wait, I have a community of people. I have people who support my business. I have people who are, you know, they're there when I need them. I have support systems. So you're just feeling a lot of gratitude. And I don't know if everyone is feeling the same way, but if other people have, if anyone's a Cancer rising or a Cancer sun or another Cancer moon, yeah, I think those are the main ones. If you have Cancer in your big three, I think you might be feeling that as well, but I think it's a very personal transit for you right now.
Okay. So if you don't have Cancer in those places, you're doomed. That's all. That's the prediction for 2026.
Thanks for having me.
Goodbye. What is in store for us in 2026?
So there's exciting transits on the horizon, and the eclipses are going to be really interesting. You are about to be in your Saturn return, and anyone that also has their natal Saturn in Aries is about to enter their Saturn return. You've kind of already dipped into it this year, but it really takes place 2026 all the way through 2028. And it's going to kind of feel a little bit like a midlife crisis or like a major moment that you're reckoning with, but it also levels up whatever part of your chart it's touching. So for anyone listening, find what house Saturn is in, look up what house that is, like what it represents. If it's the 10th house, you know, that's going to be around career. If it's the 4th house, you know, it's around family or home, and you'll be restructuring that specific area of life and rebuilding it and leveling it up. But the eclipses, I think, are going to be really interesting. The North and South node are going to switch into Aquarius and Leo. And so the people who have had certain changes unfolding in their lives in like a kind of a very familiar way, like people have been in a very similar cycle all of 2025 in terms of changes, it's going to shift what areas of life are going to be experiencing the most amount of change. And if that's confusing, I do have eclipse guides that are a digital guide that basically for each rising sign explains each eclipse and how it connects to the next one. It's kind of this domino that falls and just keeps going down into a chain reaction. So it's hard to say what will happen exactly next year without kind of looking at that big picture for those eclipses.
So going back to Saturn return, because I talk about this all the time. I'm like bracing myself. How old are you? Have you gone through it?
I'm basically the same age as you, and we both have Saturn in the 8th house. So
in the eighth house, which, yeah. Wait, what does that mean? What is that rule?
It's not the best Saturn return.
Okay. So wait, what? It's going to be rough in what way?
I mean, I'm not worried. I know it's more challenging. I think it's going to be a really big mental health year for you and for me and for anyone else with Saturn in the eighth house. And there's going to be some deeper, more complicated themes. Like, I feel like it's a bit of a heavier house, essentially. And you might go through some more complex moments in your marriage, for example, that just have to do with the fact that you're sharing a life with someone. So it could be something like a joint bank account and financial entanglements. It could be something like inheritance and bigger forms of money, or like you could be putting a big payment down on something. Like you could be buying a house or a car, like a big expense. I think you'll also be reorganizing your business to scale and make more money in a way that's not just restructuring the way that you make money. But it is also about mental health and fear of loss, fear of endings. Like your chart speaks to you being no stranger to loss and being really afraid of loss in your life, even if there's no basis on it, but just having this fear of endings or the fear of losing someone close to you. Does that hit anything relevant for you or not so much?
Yeah. Well, so when does it start for me? Has it already started? Because I know it dipped.
It's going to re-enter Aries February 13th of 2026. And there will be more retrogrades and it'll kind of be moving slowly through Aries. But I think 2026 is when you start to feel it. But because your Saturn is at 16 degrees, like kind of towards the middle, like maybe you'll feel it more so towards the end of 2026 or like into the early parts of 2027. If you want to sense, anyone listening to this, if you want to sense to what your Saturn return is going to feel like if you do have Saturn in Aries, or you want to get a sense of what Saturn will be restructuring in your life, just transiting through your chart, think back on 2023 through March of 2025 and some of the bigger stressors or changes that were going on in your life, because 2023 and 2024 had Aries eclipses, and that kind of lasted through the spring of 2025. So you probably already had a bit of a precursor of what it would be about. Like, do you have a sense for yourself of what you think it is?
I don't. Not based on like 2023 and 2024. Those were like phenomenal years for me. You know, got married, like feel at home. I don't know. Traveled.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you got married, and a lot of people get married or get engaged when they have that eighth house Saturn return, for example. But there's also like a fear of marriage or a fear of partnership for people with Saturn in the eighth house, or like a fear of divorce because you have Ceres, the asteroid. I mean, I don't want to go too far into it, but you kind of have divorce in your chart. And so there's an ingrained fear of marriage, and then you move past it and it was all good. Like, it was exciting and expansive, but the Saturn return will echo some of the next themes. Like, okay, you've gotten married. What's the next stage in your specific partnership that might trigger some of those fears again? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, not to trauma dump, but I do have like some predictions for what my Saturn return could be. You know, really wanting to get pregnant and hoping that is going to be smooth, but then also kind of bracing myself for it might not be. Like, I don't know. I have a lot of friends who go through a lot of things, and yeah. And then the other thing I can think of is like, for some reason, I'm always kind of on the edge of feeling like my dad is just going to die, and I'm going to have to not only deal with like his death and loss and grief, but deal with a lot of like finances around that. Just because he's all the way over in Russia and he has this like old apartment that was given to him during communist era. So it's all like really complicated. And how am I going to take care of his affairs? So when I hear you say divorce, I'm not like afraid in terms of like, oh my God, me and my husband are going to get divorced. What I hear is like the divorce that I had to live through of my parents for 15 years, you know, just like my upbringing. And then that kind of like resurfacing, because my mom and I kind of call him like a cockroach. Like, he's always just kind of alive and like causing problems even in his absence. So not to be very, very bitter about that, but
I didn't want to, like, I never know how to phrase this, but there's something in your chart. And I've talked about this in a different podcast, so you guys can head over to that. But Ceres is in your seventh house. So it's giving a little bit of like a space versus closeness, like your parents fighting over you a little bit. And then kind of like bad dad energy or someone that kind of just needs to be at a distance for your well-being. But what you're saying really makes sense for the Saturn return. Like everything that you touched on makes sense. And you are a child of divorce. And so you think about it in a way that is through that lens, like the way that you probably approach finances with your husband is through that lens of like, okay, we're not repeating that structure again. And like, you might have conversations around what it would be like to have a kid and how your finances are being set up. Jupiter on your moon, Jupiter on the moon for anyone with a Cancer moon is giving baby fever. I don't want a kid right now. And I suddenly, for the first time in my life, just keep getting like babies on my feed and thinking, I keep saving things being like, oh, from when I'm pregnant later, I should know this. And I'm like, I'm actively like not trying to have a kid anytime soon. So it is kind of this baby fever energy going on in your chart. If I could predict when you have a kid, do you want me to or no? Oh no, you froze. Maybe you're not meant to know because it froze. Maybe I'll tell you after.
Wait, podcast. No, please tell me, please.
I think it's very likely that it happens for you during 5th and 11th house eclipses because it'll be on your moon and it'll be in your 5th house of kids and your Capricorn Venus is there. So second half of 2027, 2028 is giving like major kid energy for you.
Okay, so this is a patience grasshopper kind of thing because I'm really hoping it's going to happen like the day after tomorrow.
Oh, you're like in it. You're in the moment. I mean, you could, going back to the Saturn return, what you said about your dad specifically and just what you said about, you know, you've gone through that first really big milestone of marriage, like you're building on it and there's going to be a lot of this like leveling up energy. And I have a little surprise for you that has to do with your dad. And I was going to save it for the middle of this podcast if it was relevant. Are you ready for it?
Yeah. Wait. This is our first time talking. What kind of surprise could you have me?
Я говорю по-русски.
Oh my God. Are you Russian?
Да. My mom was born in Russia, my dad in Ukraine, and I obviously followed you for 10 years and I knew you were Russian, so I was going to save it a little bit.
Oh my God, that is such a nice surprise. I'm sorry, I can't respond because I'm like in English mode right now.
Но я очень стесняюсь.
Я тоже. I'm really bad at Russian. Like, I think you're better probably than me because I think you probably speak it with your mom and I mostly speak it with just my grandparents. But my grandpa lives in like the very like Russian part of Brooklyn by Coney Island and he's coming to visit me tonight. And so, yeah, it just feels very, very relevant to speak Russian on this podcast momentarily.
Oh my God, I'm enthralled. So my mom just went to Argentina and their flights got canceled. So they had a reroute to JFK and she was with a group of 12 of her Russian girlfriends. So they all got out at JFK while their American husband sat in the lounge. And where did they go? They went to Brighton Beach.
That's where my grandpa is.
Okay. Yeah. So I had no idea that they would be in Brighton Beach. And actually one big marital issue in my relationship is that my husband and I have been to New York multiple times, but he's never taken me to Brighton Beach. And that just like pisses me off. Like, why wouldn't you take me there? And he's like, I grew up there. It doesn't feel like anything special. Anyway, for me, it feels like Little Russia and I want to see it so badly. So I pick my parents up from the airport and I am just like firing questions to my mom about Brighton Beach when she literally just did a 2-week tour of Argentina.
That is so funny. And it's funny that you're so excited about it because I kind of grew up visiting my grandpa and I don't think it's that, to me, it's not that interesting, but it does feel like a little Russia, like everyone around you is Russian. It's very comforting. I mean, there's a lot of Russian speakers around me in Brooklyn too, but is your husband Russian?
He is from Uzbekistan, which used to be the Union. So his whole family speaks flawless Russian and has a lot of the culture, but I guess they're technically like Middle Eastern.
Wow, I honestly gave up on trying to find someone that speaks Russian. Like, that feels so rare. Anyway, we got on a tangent, but I was like, should I tell her in the beginning or should I just whip it out in the middle of the podcast? Just to keep everyone awake. Let's look alive here.
The setup for that was perfect. I was like, what do you have to tell me about my dad? Oh my God. I thought you were going to tell me that you are one of his daughters and we're actually sisters.
We're related. Yeah.
I'm so grateful for you just describing so many things about me and my chart in detail. I do feel a little guilty though that somebody might be listening and being like, how is this relevant to me? And one thing I did really want to talk about is like the astrology of weekdays. And I mentioned at the beginning how planning, you know, your routine and your life and everything, it can be whatever you want it to be, whatever comes most natural. But you made a video around how you treat your weekdays. Could you share about that?
Yeah, I can do that. I mean, I do track the moon, so I get a sense of what my energy is going to be on a given day. But for the planetary rulerships, it's a really simple system that I use to organize my time. Like you probably notice this as someone who's self-employed, but there's always something to do. You can always be doing something at any point. And so it gives me some guardrails to just be like, okay, where should I slot certain things? So Mondays are ruled by the moon, moon day, and you can kind of trace it in different languages. I do have a guide all about the astrology of days. So it kind of tells you the roots of the days and why they're called that. But Mondays are ruled by the moon and they are meant to be very gentle, very slow. It's really unfortunate that corporate America is like, Monday's the day you get after it. You have all these meetings and you kind of are very ambitious because it's actually very gentle. And so now that I run my own business, I keep it very quiet. I would never record a podcast on a Monday, like ever. I would decline. I don't do any readings on Mondays. It's meant to just be as slow as possible. Obviously, if you can't build your own schedule, I would recommend like not doing a really hard workout, like not saying that you're going to run the long run of your training plan or signing up for some sort of like cross training, like really intense workout, like do something gentle like yoga or go for a walk or sleep in, like have it feel almost like a Sunday a little bit and less like a really energetic day. Tuesdays are the days that have more momentum. They are ruled by Mars. You might be thinking like, okay, Monday was moon day. Why is Tuesday called Tuesday? I explain it in the guide, like how it works language-wise, like what the root of it is. But basically Mars is the planet of action. And Tuesdays kind of have the momentum that you need to get things going. So you probably want to start a project or put all your meetings on a Tuesday. I would do more of like a workout on that day that's more energetic. I would make plans and kind of do things and run errands. So that's a Mars ruled day. And I do readings on that day personally. Wednesdays are ruled by Mercury. And it is kind of helpful to know what your chart ruler is. Like you can look up your rising, look up what planet rules it, and then find what day you're going to feel your best. Because Wednesdays, I feel my best because Mercury is my chart ruler. Mercury rules Wednesdays. And so the day is really nice for what Mercury represents, which is communication, writing, speaking. I love to record things. I love to write in the mornings. I often work with my designer on that day and like have some sort of collaborative call. Like it's one of my favorite days. And Thursdays are my least favorite day. Maybe you'll like them, Mary, since you have that Jupiterian energy. Jupiter rules Thursdays. And you can see the root of that in other languages, like Jueves, for example, in Spanish is Thursday. And you kind of see how Jupiter is showing up with that J. But Jupiter represents teaching, learning, travel, broadening your horizons. I also think of Jupiter as kind of like biting off more than you can chew. And so when I reach Thursdays, I feel like there's so much happening that I didn't do earlier in the week. And I'm doing a lot of things. I have social plans, but then I'm doing work. So there's a lot going on. But the best way to use a Thursday is to center the day around kind of like anything that's broadening your horizons, like reading a book or listening to a podcast or watching an online course or watching a documentary after work, like just something that feels like it's stimulating your mind or kind of speaking to your love of learning.
Is it a coincidence that this podcast airs on Thursdays?
It is no coincidence. I would never choose that day, but I love that you chose it because you have that Jupiterian energy. But what day is it right now? It's Wednesday, which is what I said for recording. So I love that you chose this.
You chose it. I gave you options.
Oh, did I choose it? I know what I want. What would you have chosen? Or do you just do any day usually?
I love Wednesdays and Thursdays. Wednesdays always feel very long in a good way, like they feel very expansive. And then Thursdays, I definitely resonate with biting off more than I can chew, but also very full.
Yeah, very full is a great way to describe like the Jupiter energy. Like there's so much happening. It's exciting. Like I do readings on that day. And it's so you might be listening to this and you might love Thursdays. You might have a Sagittarius sun, or you could be a Sag rising or a Pisces rising, a Pisces sun, Jupiter close to your sun, because my partner is a Sagittarius. And I asked him, I was like, what is your favorite day? And he just said Thursday. And I was like, what is up with people really liking certain days? And it really does match up with your chart. So there is a table in my guide, kind of in the first couple pages, that matches up. Like if you have this chart placement, you probably feel the most like yourself on this day, or this day is really supportive for you. But every day is great. There are no bad days. There are no bad parts. Like obviously each energy of each day is going to feel different. But Friday is ruled by Venus. Obviously Friday we know is date nights. It's kind of cute that the planet of relationships rules over this day. I would say that this day is best spent not quite like a Monday. Like, yes, it's more of like this rhythm, but kind of do things that ground you or feel sensual. Like do what you said in the very beginning of like rolling around in bed and kind of taking your time waking up, or having like a coffee ritual, or doing yoga, or just doing something that feels like it's embodying in some way, or like you're feeling grounded as you're doing it. I personally interpret Venus as beauty and aesthetic for the day. And so I work on all my social media posts on a Friday, like all my Instagram posts, for example, or like I edit reels, but there's different ways to look at it. Like you can also have like a date night or have like one-on-one time with people and have it be more of this like social focus. But that's also maybe a good petition for why we shouldn't work on Fridays. They just kind of feel more social, like happy hour energy, like so different from a Tuesday where you're really getting things done. Saturdays are ruled by Saturn. Saturn day, we can kind of see that. Saturn is the ancient ruler of Aquarius. So maybe you like the day, I'm not sure. Yeah, those are the days where you want to be running errands, doing things that are responsible, like helping you check things off your list so that you can relax after. I feel like a lot of people don't do anything on a Saturday and then get stressed out because there's this sense of looming responsibilities that you have to do on a Sunday. And Sundays are for doing nothing and really relaxing. So Saturdays are when you should just tackle like the workout that you want to do, running to the grocery store, like running an errand, and then just being done with it and enjoying yourself. Kind of like a delayed gratification day. And then Sundays are ruled by the sun. Sunday, we can see why.
That's exactly how I like my end of week. I'm a big fan of a flex Friday, like a little work, a little social. And I actually love to work a little bit on Saturdays too. I just feel very like on purpose and productive without the pressure of being on purpose and productive. And then I can feel like I fully lizard, sunbathe, relax on Sunday, especially if that Saturday is a blend of both.
Exactly. Like Sunday ruled by the sun, it has that Leo energy, like you need to sleep in and lounge and do nothing. Like it's a great day to just, like you said, lizard in the sun. Like that's perfect. And I think it feels better if you use the Saturday that way, where you like clean and create your space to then kind of rot and relax. If you leave everything to Sunday, then it's, you don't really enjoy the day to the fullest. So
yeah, and then you get the Sunday scaries and a panic attack.
You get the Sunday scaries. Do you still get Sunday scaries? Like, I don't even know. Have you ever worked a 9-to-5 before transitioning?
No, I'm so fortunate. I've never had like a jobby job where I have to show up on Monday.
Jobby job.
I have had the Sunday scaries intermittently, but honestly, not as much like working for myself, because similar to you, Monday, I call it my transition day or admin day. So I'll do anything that feels like, I'll even schedule like a pap smear on a Monday because I'm like, I got to get it over with, you know, or just do like emails and organization stuff. As you were talking about Monday specifically, you said it's very unfortunate that corporate America tells us to like get after it and overbook with meetings and go from like a relaxed Sunday to that. It's pretty extreme. I'm thinking of how when I was like deeply entrenched in diet culture and working out a lot and everything, like Monday just came with so much pressure in so many different regards, to do a hard workout and take all these meetings and like get everything done.
The weekend leading into it, like there's a lot of pressure on Mondays, but they should just be laundry day and working and like puttering around the house. Like they should not be so intense.
No, absolutely. Monday is always my dick around day. And that's actually prevents me from getting the Sunday scaries. But yeah, I think it's fun. I don't know. Some people, there's like a trend on TikTok being like how to add whimsy to your life. And I think this is one of those things, and I'm sorry, I know like for you, it's more serious as like your career, but.
No, it is whimsical to think about the moon and always know where it is and kind of align with its energies. Like, I think that's is the definition of whimsy.
Exactly. And like the other thing I felt like was fate is right before this call, like I just recorded a brand deal with Stardust.
I love Stardust. They follow Cosmic Latte. And I'm like, hey.
Oh my gosh. Have you collabed?
No, we need to collab. We just kind of comment on each other's posts and we're just like,
let me try to make an intro through my management team. Yeah, that would be a really cool collab. You could do something like really unique. Danielle, thank you so much. This was so, so fun. Hopefully not too self-indulgent and still just interesting to see how one can apply astrology to their daily life, make the mundane a little more whimsical. Do you have any parting thoughts?
No parting thoughts. This was just super fun to chat about the different parts of the chart. If you want to learn more about astrology or read the Astrology of Days guide or start tracking the moon, which I think is such a fun practice. Those are both such grounding everyday tools. You can find me at the Cosmic Latte. Cosmic Latte is the average color of the universe. It's like this coffee colored beige. So you'll see it in my branding. And I do also do one-on-one readings. They tend to book out. So if you listen to this podcast and you want to book with me, send me an email. Thank you so much for having me, Mary.
If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. As somebody who works mostly behind the scenes on this podcast, I love hearing from you and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.